Now, each week around about this time, we like to discuss food, but we do it from a historical rather than a culinary perspective. Colonial gastronomer Jackie Newling is the author of Eat Your History. She's blogging at The Cook and the Curator, and she's also joining me on the phone. Good morning, Jackie.
Hi, Nick.
How are you this morning?
I'm really well, and you?
Good. Now, we have been, before I came on board, you've been working your way through history, talking about some of the amazing breakfast food stuffs.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the whole thing sort of evolve into what we regard breakfast to be now, I find.
And we're hitting that 1900s now, I believe.
So, yeah, into the 20th century, very modern. Queen Victoria died in 1901, and that was the same time that Australia federated. So you sort of have this sort of strange mix of this idea of new beginnings, that Australia is this entity, that it deserves to be, sort of standing on its own two feet. But then you also have the sort of mourning, if you like, of Queen Victoria dying. But in a way, that does usher in a new sort of modern era for a lot of people. So, you've got this sort of this new idea of perhaps of what Australia might be in this new century.
Certainly a time of new beginnings all round, really.
Definitely. And, they didn't know what was to come. So, of course, we know in retrospect, in hindsight, there were world wars to come and a chronic depression and all that sort of thing. But in that first sort of decade before 15 years before the First World War, there was this sort of new idea of new promise.
Interesting time period. So what was food stuff like then?
Well, you still had a sort of hangover from Victorian times. But you're finding, and I think I mentioned last week, there were still people were having things that were quick to cook and quick to eat because people had to get on with their day. So things like, kidneys on toast and sardines, eggs, of course, egg and bacon, everything that was sort of, pretty much there ready to go, omelettes and those sort of thing. And that really hasn't changed for us much at all.
You don't get as many kidneys on the menu, unfortunately.
No,
I do love deviled kidneys. I really, really genuinely do, and you never see them anymore.
Well, I love that you mentioned devils because that's something that does come up. I've got a couple of Australian cookbooks from that period sitting in front of me, and deviled eggs, deviled anchovies, deviled kidneys are on the list.
Now, why are we obsessed with that?
Well, again, it was quick, but it was tasty. So anyone that tells you that, old-fashioned food or, colonial food was boring and bland, I totally disagree with that. The idea of deviling was to, their cooking styles might have been plain for our idea of, zest is. They weren't stir-frying or anything like that. But it was still quite conventional. But they were adding really piquant, really strong flavours. So Worcester sauce, curry powder, cayenne pepper, hot chilli powder. They were looking for those really sort of, peaky flavours that gave things a whack. So a devil is a classic for that. It's a mixture of usually Worcester sauce, mustard, can be a bit of curry powder, but definitely cayenne. So the idea of the devil hot as Hades, that sort of thing.
Look,
they're really spicing something up.
It's tasty as hell. I absolutely love it. And I think it's, I've often wondered if it was around about sort of, it came about to disguise maybe meat and food that wasn't necessarily at the peak of its condition to be eaten.
Yes, that is an interesting concept, and it's one that's bandied about a lot about spices and hot curries and things like that. It certainly could jazz up something that was otherwise plain or something that perhaps otherwise wasn't as sweet as perhaps you would like. But let's face it, if something's off, if something is, especially meat or fish, if that's off, it's off. It doesn't matter what you're going to put with it, you're still going to get sick. So I think people work that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it did certainly jazz up what otherwise might have been quite plain.
So
it was a way of, freshening up leftovers, if you like. So, they loved things like hashes where you would, you'd get your old meat from your Sunday roast and you'd grate that up or chop it up small. We talk about hash browns from America, which are basically grated potatoes. you'd get hashes of meat. So they'd grate those up and bind it up with some sort of mashed potato and egg and extend it a bit. And, you know, you've sort of got a rissole, basically, or a croquette.
Well, that sounds a lot like the corned beef hash, which I'm very fond of back in America. And I'm always amazed never to see it out here because it's delicious.
Yeah, it's interesting. Other cultures seem to have hung on to these dishes a lot better than we have. We've been, one thing that I think is fantastic about Australia is we've got really quite adventurous tastes. So we love the idea of something new. The downside of that is we're quite fickle and sometimes we do let good practical, you know, dishes go. And that idea of that is you know, that idea of the leftovers for breakfast, they're rehashed. You know, if we're going to talk about sustainability and stuff like that, it's probably a good idea to bring that sort of thinking back.
I would agree. Economically and sustainably, we throw out a lot of food.
Well, we certainly do. And, you know, if you look at something in your fridge, it's probably languished there for 3 or 4 days. You think, oh, you know, at best you'll give it to the dog. So, you know, there's no reason that can't be turned into, you know, good old-fashioned leftover dishes. You know, there's a whole repertoire to be had from those. And often you did find them on the breakfast table because, you know, let's face it, you're not going to serve it to guests or perhaps, just, you know, when hubby comes home from a hard day at work, that might be a bit of an insult. But for breakfast, it was a really good idea and, you know, used up what was just kicking around.
Now, you mentioned we were kind of ahead of the world wars and the economic crash, so we're not talking about austerity cooking just yet, are we?
No, it's interesting, isn't it? But in that Victorian era, there was a really, there was a great honour in not wasting.
Mm.
So, you know, that idea of using your leftovers and planning your meals, all the cookbooks, you know, have suggestions about domestic economy. So it wasn't to be necessarily a pauper and frugal. It was a practical, you know, they were right into it. They really admired practical management. And, you know, the household was the woman's domain, and she managed that very practically, very sensibly. So it was a matter of pride to work that way.
How common?
And again, it's something we've lost.
It is definitely something we've lost. How common was fresh fruit around this time?
Oh, look, fresh fruit, you don't find it mentioned in recipe books because you don't need to necessarily do anything with it.
Ah.
So it was always about anything in season. In fact, one of the things I did notice in the Kookaburra Cookery Book, which is from 1911, for breakfast, is bacon and bananas.
Oh, wow.
Or sausages and bananas. So they were frying the bananas up alongside the bacon, which, you know, I can imagine that could actually be quite really nice, especially in a winter's morning because... you know, they get all sort of soft and all their sugars develop and it could be quite indulgent, actually.
Like a bit of a caramelised sweetness, but I like that. It's almost treating it like a plantain more than a banana.
That's right, yes. And, yeah, that's right. And so bananas, you even see recipes for banana curries and things like that.
Mm.
At that stage, it wasn't just a sort of fresh fruit. It was used in cooking as well and to make chutneys, things like that. So... if you've got some underripe bananas or actually, you know, yeah, frying them up in a bit of butter.
All right, I might actually bacon try that. So if you served something breakfast-wise from this time period, how shocked would a modern eater be? Or do you think it'd be actually fairly familiar to us?
Look, I think it'd be fairly familiar in that the eggs and bacon and those sort of things are around. But I think you could, like you were just saying about, you know, deviled kidneys or, you know, hashed corned beef hash, you could surprise someone with something a little bit different to the normal repertoire, but explain to them that it's, you know, that's what our grandfathers were eating. So, well, probably actually my grandmother would have been eating as a child, so that tells you my age.
Hey, look, my grandmother's got stories of eating galah meat, so don't worry about that.
Oh, good on her. Mm. Oh, was she... she well, that's the other thing. You know, I'm very much talking in a lot of ways about urban people. But in the country, you tend to find people not so fixed to that breakfast, lunch and dinner sort of routine, or breakfast and dinner that is defined by going off to work, you know, in a sort of industrial sense or business sense. So you find people getting up very early in the morning, getting their chores done. We look after a house called, down at Nowra called Maroogal, and it was four spinsters lived there. And they would get up, you know, they were maintaining that respectable Victorian genteel sort of, and so they couldn't afford servants anymore. So they would get up early, do all their household chores, and then spend the rest of the day, you know, looking relaxed and having social sort of, you know, paying social calls and things. But their winter breakfast was baked apples.
Wow.
So, yeah, so you'd be getting the fire on, you'd be getting the stove on. Remember, that's a fuel stove, so the wood, you know, would be chopped the day before and all the rest. And it was something that you could pop into the oven while you're doing all these, all your household chores, and then sit down to a, you know, relatively warming and comforting, but also nutritious breakfast.
Jackie, thank you so much for this. I always find this fascinating. What are we going to move into next week? What time period?
Well, I think we should move into see what changes the war made to our diets and the way we ate what we ate.
All right.
Be good.
Let's have a chat about that next week. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day, Nick.
You can catch more of Jackie on her blog, The Cook and the Curator.